All right, our next case for argument is 24-1574, Associated Energy versus United States. Come on up, please proceed. 24-1574, Associated Energy versus United States. Is it Kenai?
Yes, Your Honor.
Come on up. I'd say we don't bite, but that might not be your impression right now.
Your Honors, it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for having us. On behalf of Associated Energy Group, or AEG, we are appealing Judge Bonilla at the Court of Federal Claims decision finding that AEG lacks standing. We believe the decision was erroneous. We believe the Oak Grove decision...
Can you speak up a little bit? I feel like everyone might not be able to hear you.
What was that, Your Honor?
Can you speak up a little bit?
I sure,
will demonstrate.
Right. I've never gotten that criticism. Your Honors, when we look at Judge Bonilla's decision of February 29th, ultimately this was a bench decision. There was no written decision that came from it. As a result, we believe inadvertently or without significant detail to the Federal Circuit case law, found that we needed to establish a substantial chance of success under the now incontrovertible rules of engagement. So he essentially said that we need to establish standing with the...
Let me just make sure I understand. Didn't he say that you need to have your client needed to show that they could meet the requirements of the contract, and that would include having a PAL, and that you didn't have a PAL, and so therefore you didn't have either Article 3 standing or standing under the Tucker Act, right?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Okay, so why was that wrong?
Your Honor, that's why we're here today, and I want to walk you through. We believe he completely applied the incorrect standard in assessing standing. So he essentially, in this context, the court's case law shows that he should have applied a different standard at this stage in the case and looked to see whether, but for those challenges, we would have had a substantial chance of success. And when you look at his decision...
Can you be specific as you're talking to us about whether or not you're talking about Article 3 standing or statutory standing?
Your Honor, I will address them both. I believe they're near identical, and in fact the case law has said that if you meet Tucker Act, you have exceeded the requirements of Article 3. But I will address them both in detail, Your Honors. Judge Bonilla, throughout his February 29th decision, repeatedly could not see past the PAL, which we were challenging. The PAL.
Do you think under the Tucker Act, in order to have standing in a case like this, that you have to establish that you would have been able to obtain the contract if it had been handled properly?
I'm not sure I'm following your question, Your Honor. Under the Tucker Act, we would need only show that if our protest grounds were correct, which are supposed to be assumed to be true at this stage in the case, that we would have had a substantial chance of winning the award. And as the prior awardee...
That's just it. The substantial chance of winning the award.
Correct.
If we think that it was appropriate for the contract to require applicants to possess a PAL, if we don't think the government erred in making that part of the contractual requirements, and your company does not have a PAL, how can you argue you would have had a likelihood of substantial, whatever that standard was you just said, substantial likelihood of getting the award?
Your Honor.
If that's a precondition to being awarded this new contract, don't argue with me. We've been doing it already without a PAL. I don't want to know that. I already know all that, and we can get to that in a minute. My question is focused on if there wasn't an error in the solicitation that about requiring a PAL, and you don't have one. I don't see how you prove that other piece, which is substantially likely we would have gotten the contract if this had done.
Your Honor, we're challenging the inclusion of the PAL. That's part of our...
I started by saying this is a hypothetical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my hypothetical was, assume I think it's okay for the government to include a PAL
mm-hmm.
in that contract requirement. If that's my assumption, if it's okay to include a PAL, don't you agree that you can't prove a substantial likelihood that you would have been awarded the contract because you don't have a PAL?
Well, Your Honor, you're not supposed to do that at the standing. You're at the merits.
I'm allowed to do whatever I want. Hypothetical question. This is a hypothetical question.
Hypothetical question. So we're at the merits determination now. Tell me where we are in this hypothetical.
Don't fight her hypothetical. Just answer her question that she posed.
If the court were to find that the PAL is appropriately included in the RFP, would we have a substantial chance of award? Is that the question?
Yes.
Your Honor, that means you ruled against us on the merits.
Okay, can I ask you another question, which is...
I don't know if I'm following you.
Can I ask you another question? I'm having a hard time, a little bit of a hard time, following your argument today, because when I look at what relief you sought in your complaint, I don't necessarily see you complaining about the PAL. I see you saying that there's a problem with the sole source contract to UCIG. I see you saying that it should be enjoined. I think you are focusing on there was some other activity that you seem to have been forced focusing on, maybe fraud and different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see, this was a post-award bid protest.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm not sure that you challenged particular terms, including the requirement of a PAL, in that sole source bridge contract award.
We did, Your Honor. And
where would that be so I can see it?
Counts 2 and 3 focus on the terms
of
the...
Can you tell me what page? I don't know where that is in the appendix.
Sure, Your Honor. Counts 2 and 3, Your Honor, and I'll give you the page numbers right now.
Yeah, the complaint is, I think, at 377.
So, Your Honor, count 2 is at 416, count 3 is at 418, and naturally these counts incorporate the preceding paragraphs where Mr. Cheney's declaration is quoted discussing how AG was denied the PAL by the Ministry of Energy because he denied their request on repeated
That's not the same. Where do you say in here that you're challenging the RFP's inclusion of the PAL requirement?
Because you do seem to be doing that in your fifth grade protest, right? Right, so there might be another case, but I'm really puzzled because I didn't think you did it. So I need to know specifically where you did it in this complaint and where this argument is being made.
Your Honor, it's in counts 2 and 3. So count 2 is talking about how
okay,
the...
Appendix
page number and where...
Okay, 416, I'll start there. So DLA and its justification and approval.
What page, what number of a... I'm on page 416, number 121, number 122. What paragraph number is it that you make the argument that it was wrong?
Starting in count 2 at paragraph 126, 127, we're talking about the exact issues that we just discussed in detail in the pages
Neither
before.
Neither of these mention the word PAL or mention the PAL, right? 126, I don't see it. Where?
Further, DLA failed to address the ongoing corruption in Djibouti and the MOA's efforts to interfere with this procurement or to meet its obligations to solicit offers from as many sources as practical.
But that's corruption. That's your bribery argument. That doesn't have anything to do with PAL.
That's the PAL, Your Honor. The bribery was solicited for the PAL.
Arguing that there's an implicit reference in this page that we cannot see that indicates
no,
your...
No, Your Honor.
Wait, let me finish. If I'm asking a question, let me finish, sir. So you're arguing that there implicitly is something here that we can't see on these pages that we're all looking at where you have actually challenged the PAL requirement?
No, the PAL is on page 0402, paragraph 64. We talk specifically about the PAL, and we incorporate these paragraphs by reference in the count.
Oh, and you have another? Okay. Where are you...
Appendix 0402, Your Honor, paragraph 64. Mr. Cheney's declaration, former colonel in the Air Force, lays it all out in detail, how he was solicited on multiple occasions.
But paragraph 64 just says, this is your statement of facts. This is commencing in March of 2023 into the present. It explains, that you all have... obstructing AEG's supply of fuel and the imposition of the new licensing requirement referred to as the PAL and the solicitation under the table payments from AEG. I mean, I don't I still don't, I don't know, I just, I think Judge Stoll's correct.
When I read your complaint, what I see is you complaining about the award of a sole source bridge contract to UCIG because of fraud, not complaining about the terms of that sole source bridge contract.
Your Honor, I apologize for that confusion, but that's not what we're doing.
It's not confusion. I mean, point to us where it is.
Your Honor,
I want you to answer a question, but just one more thing I want to throw out, because my brilliant clerk just pointed out to me something I forgot. Didn't the court actually strike Mr. Cheney's declaration?
No, Your Honor. He struck a first declaration. There was another declaration in the case. Ultimately,
so this one here was not struck. The one you're referring to right here, Cheney Declaration, paragraph 10 and 21, that was not struck.
This one is stricken, Your Honor.
Oh, okay.
But in terms of our complaint, Your Honor, right here, paragraph 64 says that we were solicited for bribe payments under the table for the PAL. Paragraph 126, count 2 and count 3, then discuss how DLA solely because only one offer possessed the PAL went forward with a sole source award, and that's made clear in their J&A. That is the entire basis of the sole source. They said we had no time to engage in advanced planning. We must go forward.
Okay, what other arguments do you have? Because I will tell you right now, I don't think that Judge Bonilla erred by failing to appreciate this argument, because I don't think you made this argument in your complaint. So what other arguments do you have for us?
Yes, Your Honor. So I'd like to walk you through our views of, at the very first hearing with Judge Bonilla on December 22nd, 23, transcript page 30, Judge Bonilla said, AG would get past the standing issue because if the United States government is only going to contract with individuals who are allegedly making these bribery payments, the U.S. government is not allowed to do that and would have to come up with an alternative. He made that decision on the record. Ultimately, a few months later, we're at the merits hearing, and Judge Bonilla finds, as you'll see in his Appendix 1, his transcript.
Hold on. You cited Appendix page 30, and there is nothing from Judge Bonilla on Appendix page 30. This is your argument to the court. So what is it? I must have missed.
We're quoting.
You gave me a page cite, and I must have missed it. What is the page cite where Judge Bonilla said what you just said he said?
Appendix 0029, Your Honor, is us quoting Judge Bonilla.
0029, again, this is you. Or the very top of it there? Is that where you're thinking he said this?
AG would get past the standing issue, that quote, Your Honor.
Do you have a line number? Because there are line numbers here.
There is. Do you have a line number on page A29?
A line number?
Yeah.
You can borrow my appendix if you like. I mean, I don't mind.
Yeah, the way our appendices are set up, you could also point us to both the page and the line number so we can all be on the same exact spot on the page.
And I think you might be citing a different page because the 29 and 30 are all of 30 is you talking.
I apologize.
Most of 29
line
is
9. It starts at line 9. It says you
That's
said.
You. That's you talking. That's you, Mr. Kanai, right? Mr. Kanai, that's you talking. That's not the judge. That's you.
No, Your Honor, I'm quoting Judge Bonilla there. Judge Bonilla made that rule.
On line 6, on page 29, it identifies who the person is that's speaking, and it says it's you.
Your Honor, let me try to clarify the confusion here. At the hearing, we don't have a written decision in this case. It was ruled from the bench. At a prior hearing, Judge Bonilla made the statements that I just did, that DLA could not do what it now was intending to do. He had already ruled, essentially. He said, go forward with filing your brief, but our view is, I don't believe the transcript from the December 22nd hearing is in the record. I don't know that that's in there, but we're quoting him. I tell you, as an officer of the court, this occurred. He said that AG would get past the standing issue because if the United States government is only going to contract with individuals who are allegedly making these bribery payments, the U.S. government is not allowed to do that, and they must come up with an alternative. Now, we filed a supplemental notice with the court producing Judge Bonilla's September 6th decision. We did that recently. This decision provides this court with much more understanding of what he was thinking at the time. And he says, I drew a distinction for evaluating pre-award and post-award standing. And what he did in this is he said, if it's a pre-award protest, which he ruled in our favor on standing on, after initially saying he thought the same ruling would apply, he said, here I would apply these facts, particularly AG's prior success at winning the predecessor solicitation.
To be clear, what you're talking about right now, does this have anything to do with this case? Is this case?
Yes.
What you're talking about right now, this occurred in this case.
This is Judge
Bonilla. I think you're talking about another case. I think you're talking about a different case before Judge Bonilla, not this case.
You're talking about the opinion in the fifth bid protest brought by your
court. Yes, Your Honor, where he's drawing a distinction.
Which is not the opinion that we're reviewing for today.
The reason I'm raising with you, Your Honors, is because he drew a distinction. He explained this ruling for you, Your Honors, which you don't have in his transcript. So he explains why he did what he did there. And I think it's very relevant to you because of the Oak Grove decision.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, Your Honor.
Just before we move on and you're starting to talk about his later opinion where he contrasts the situation in the fifth bid protest from this case, is there anything you want us to look at? Now, I see, at least what I have, is that when he ruled from the bench, it starts at a page A185 of the appendix. And before that, there's argument. And page A185, is there anything you want to point to us here where you think he made any particular error from page A185 to A193?
That's exactly what we're challenging, Your Honor, yes. This is where he walks through his Tucker Act findings and his Article 3 findings.
That. Is there something in particular you're challenging here?
Yes.
Okay.
We're challenging the fact that he is requiring us to establish standing under the rules we're challenging, which we believe is inconsistent with Your Honor's recent decision in Oak Grove, which I want to talk about with this court. In Oak Grove, Your Honor.
Okay, counsel, you have used all your time, all your rebuttal time. I'm going to restore some rebuttal time. If that's okay. Do you have more questions? No, okay. We're going to go ahead and hear from the government, and I'll restore some of your rebuttal time. Mr. Is it Pertoni?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did I say it right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, correct me if I said it wrong.
That's correct.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'd like to address a question that the court asked about whether AEG would have been able to perform this contract without possessing the petroleum activities license. And the short answer is of course, no. They do not possess that license. They would not be a responsible
officer. Okay, but sorry.
Go ahead.
I think you're going to ask the same question I'm going to ask. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, the challenge in this protest, do you see where they challenged the sole source bridge contract on the basis of it requiring a PAL?
I agree that it's not a direct challenge, and they're in the complaint. They're not making a direct challenge to the text of the contract that includes
and
this
do
report.
Do you also agree, and you seem like you want to say something else, and I'll let you do that, but do you also agree that they did perfect that challenge in the fifth bid protest? There's another bid protest that's pending that is not before us, but it does look like in that bid protest they much more clearly made that assertion.
Yes, Your Honor. In the fifth, the one that Judge Bonilla recently denied a preliminary injunction, they did directly challenge the text of the solicitation, and my understanding is they are now currently amending their complaint to challenge post-award the same contract after the award went again to UCIG. But insofar as the license is a requirement and underlay the reasons that the agency chose to pursue a sole source contract, the presence or absence of the license does matter, and the fact that AEG does not have this license is...
Wait, what do you mean the presence? You mean the PAL? The presence, the absence of the PAL don't matter?
It does matter. Sorry, Your Honor. Insofar as the complaint does not bring a direct challenge to the language of the solicitation,
okay.
But the... Insofar as the complaint challenges the sole source award, the reason, the underlying reason for the sole source award was this requirement for the PAL.
Right, and that's a law in that country.
In Djibouti, yes, Your Honor.
Right? Okay.
But what about, wouldn't they have had to have, one of the things that Judge Bonilla seems to say is that any contract would have required the PAL, and they didn't have a PAL, so therefore, no standing. I'm testing the part about any contract would have required a PAL, not just based on, the factual questions, which seems to be what the issue is, the merits in the fifth bid protest. Not looking at factually, is there a finding about whether a PAL is required to perform this, which seems to be like a highly contested factual issue. But legally, is there a challenge or can there be a challenge in the second bid protest to the requirement of a PAL in any solicitation from the government.
So I don't want to make sure I understand
in this
the question.
Whole contract, yes. In this bid protest to the sole source bridge contract, was there a challenge to the existence of the PAL requirement? That, do you see the difference? One's a legal issue, one's a factual question.
No, I understand that, Your Honor. I understand that the current bid protest to the Court of Federal Claims tees this issue up much more cleanly. Our understanding receiving this complaint was that the PAL was at issue. And that in our understanding, the only way that AEG could possibly have standing in this protest would be if the PAL requirement were not imposed. And so maybe this is a counterfactual way of getting at a challenge to the PAL. But it sort of, I suppose we are responding to their arguments insofar as we are saying the factual issues, as Your Honor points out, that the PAL is required, imposed by this foreign sovereign government.
Do you have a view on Judge Bonilla's statement that, or whether the law, I should say, forget about the statement, but whether the law requires that if you're going to challenge the terms of a solicitation or a contract, it has to be before a pre-bid protest as opposed to a post-award protest?
So I believe, Your Honor, that Judge Bonilla has got that correct. I think he's referring to the waiver rules that stem from the blue and gold case from this court, that if there is this PAL requirement in the solicitation and AEG disagrees with it, then they must bring that protest to that issue before award is made.
And what about in a circumstance where it's a sole source award that nobody knows about until it's awarded? Do you then have to make it clear, at least in your bid protest, what you would do if you had standing? I mean, what you would do if you were successful? You would then have to have an award, and when if it was issued and it required a PAL, you would go ahead and issue another bid protest challenging the requirement of a PAL?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's correct.
Piggybacking on her question, how are they supposed to do it pre-award when it's confidential? Yeah.
No, I understand that. In a case like that, it's not clear to me that there would be such a waiver issue if they didn't have awareness. There's no way it could be a patent.
You're saying in a case like that, but this is that case, right?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a case where there's a sole source.
So now you're saying there's no waiver issue under Blue and Gold.
Well, but Judge Bonilla's statement that we were talking about was in the second, the fifth bid protest, where AEG brought a pre-award protest to the open solicitation issued last April. And there they challenged directly that solicitation mentions in the list of required licenses, you must have this PAL. Okay. And they brought a direct challenge to that pre-award, as they would be required to without waiver.
But in this case, how does it apply? How are they to do a pre-award protest in this case?
I don't believe that would be possible in the sole source, or not reasonable to expect that.
You filed a 28J letter, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you said you'd be prepared to talk about the impact of the expiration of the bridge contract. Can you speak to that?
Yes, Your Honor. That at this point, with the expiration of the bridge, we believe this case is moot. And mootness is another threshold issue in addition to standing on which this court could decide this matter. That because this contract, the bridge contract they're challenging, ended at the end of August and all deliveries were completed by the end of September, a new award has been made under the open solicitation. There is no longer any active case or controversy here. To the extent AEG in its briefing anticipated this issue and raised the possibility of the capable of repetition yet evading review exception, of course we would agree that this issue is not only capable but in fact has been repeated in the subsequent bid protest. But there is not a question of evading review. That bid protest is currently ongoing, as the court has acknowledged. The issue is more squarely before.
So is your argument there that for mootness purposes, obviously, a litigant can continue to pursue a case if it's capable of being replicated because, you know, they would like a more judicious, clear rule. You're arguing, I think, if I understand it, that we should not rely on that to overcome mootness in this case because the situation is, in fact, happening again and they can charge it. They can challenge it down the road. Is that your argument?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But is that right under the law? And if so, tell me what case. And the reason I say that is because part of this idea about look, this is fully briefed. They just spent a lot of time and money on this. The government spent a lot of time and money on this. Why would we deem it moot? Wouldn't it be helpful if we decided this issue now, especially because it could possibly avoid a lot more litigation over this issue? So how does what you're suggesting to me about mootness apply in this case? And do you have a good case that you could point me to where it says, you know, if it's going to be decided somewhere else, you should still stand out?
So, yes, Your Honor, we first emphasize the fact that this exception for capable of repetition evading review is for exceptional circumstances. The Supreme Court said that repeatedly in the Lyons case, for instance. And we would also point to the fact that in this circumstance here, the contract that is currently being challenged by AG in the bid protest at the Court of Federal Claims is for a 3-year term. We would compare that to the Kingdomware decision recently, where the Supreme Court said that these bid protests go so fast, it's hard to get review. That protest involved a 2-year contract. So this contract here is longer in duration, provides more time for AG to obtain review, which, of course, it already has begun the process. And, you know, to Your Honor's point about the efforts that the parties have put into the briefing and bringing this matter to San Francisco to argue before this court, we understand that that's not negligible, but if there is no longer a case or controversy, then we would say the court does not have power to act anymore.
So at least the way I'm understanding it, you proposed 3 possible bases that we could decide on, right? There's the Article 3 standing issue, the statutory standing issue, and now this mootness argument.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which argument do you think would be the best way for us to decide this case?
I think at this point, with the bridge contract having been completed, our position is that this case is moot, and then at that point there's no need to address these standing issues and the question of the factual
issues. Because they're all threshold issues.
Yes.
I don't know. One of them have more priority than the other? if one of them was jurisdictional, that would be different. These are threshold as opposed to jurisdictional, so...
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that from our position, that the mootness argument makes the most sense. I understand it was presented at a later stage in a briefing. In this case, we did not address it in our brief because we had not yet.
It
wasn't moot at that point. That's correct. But we acknowledge as well that the Article 3 issues of standing would be.
Would you mind teasing out for me what differences you think exist in this space between the Article 3 standing requirements and the Tucker Act standing requirements?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that we can look to this court's recent decision in the Khaki case, which was on the Tucker Act standing in particular, where the court held that was no longer a jurisdictional question. But the court did hold open the possibility that jurisdictional questions of Article III standing could arise in certain circumstances. I'd agree with my colleague that the Tucker Act is more stringent than Article III, so if a party cannot meet the Article III standard, then of course they cannot meet the Tucker Act standard, and they can't meet Article III either.
Which way does that go?
I'm sorry, I may have said it the incorrect way. Because the Tucker Act is a narrower standard.
They could have Article III standing, but not have Tucker Act standing.
Perhaps, although I'm not sure I'm going to pull a hypothetical out of my head right now for that issue. But in this case, I think this court has been clear that Article III standing does apply to cases brought to the Court of Federal Claims. There's the Anderson case that shows that, even though that's an Article I court.
Do you agree that we could, if we go the standing route, decided on either Tucker Act standing or on Article III standing, we could just reach one of those in any opinion?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think if the court believes that there is a lack of Article III standing, that is an issue that would not allow the court to reach the Tucker Act issue. I know that the Court of Federal Claims decided both in the alternative, but if the court believes that there is no Article III standing, then there would be no need to go to the Tucker Act.
What if the court believed there was no Tucker Act standing? Would they need to continue?
I believe so, Your Honor, because the Tucker Act is a question that Tucker Act, the question of Tucker Act standing, in my understanding of the Khaki case, requires analysis of the merits to understand the question of prejudice and interested party, whereas the Article III is a threshold issue and would prevent even analysis of the merits.
Thank you.
So if the court were to determine, you know, whether mootness or Article III standing, those, of course, are both equal threshold issues for the court to decide on those grounds. And because AEG does not have an injury to point to, it can't point to Article III standing either.
Anything further?
If the court has no further questions, we'd ask that you affirm the judgment below.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Kanai, you have 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you.
Could you address the mootness argument made by the government?
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Could you address the mootness argument made by the government?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd be happy to. So, we just, last week, we were before Judge Bonilla, the exact issue came up with him, and we talked about it. The fact that the very issues right now challenging an award, we call it another sole source award to UCIG, it was a non-competitive award with the PAL. Judge Bonilla immediately issued an order, and he said, the party should come prepared to explain how my prior order does not apply here, the one that's being appealed. We had a hearing last week where Judge Bonilla and I discussed this issue in court, and we explained that we'll be here this week, which he's aware of, and he agreed for briefing to continue in this case as we await this decision. He, in fact, said he awaits. And,
we're going to be looking at whether this appeal is moot, right? So setting Judge Bonilla's, the interchange you had with Judge Bonilla aside, what is your argument before this court today for why this is not moot in response to the government's argument?
Your Honor, and I believe my opposing counsel here got the standard correct. We're showing that this is not only capable, it is reoccurring right now. And so we believe under the case law that we've cited in our briefs, which I could cite for Your Honors, that this matter needs to be resolved. Now, if it isn't, we will be right back before you again in short order. The court will follow his same ruling. He's already said that he would. So we believe under that standard, as Judge Moore acknowledged moments ago, it wouldn't make sense not to decide this issue by this court because we will be here again and our client has expended an enormity of time and resources as you can.
What's your base case for that? Because he's right. The Supreme Court has said this is exceptional circumstances when we would reach an issue that is, in fact, mooted under the set of facts in front of us. And I guess one of them is capable of being repeated again. But is there a really good case that you have that says, and you should definitely decide that moot case because there's another one in the pipeline already? Like, is that, because when it's in the pipeline already, it's like, well, it's going to come back and somebody else can decide it. Was there a good case you have where the Supreme Court or this court or the Ninth Circuit or really any court said, you know what, I'm going to move right past this mootness concern because there's a pending lawsuit that's also raising this, so we should just go ahead and do it now?
Your Honor, I can't tell you we have the very best case that exists out there, but the cases we cited are Torrington v. United States, Federal Circuit, 1995.
Which page? It sounds like you're reading from maybe your brief. What page in your brief would I find them on? Is that what you're saying? Are they in your brief?
They're on our brief, Your Honor.
Is there a particular page in your brief where you have a bunch of them and I would be able to look back at it?
It's very hard to hear in here.
45,
Your Honor. Okay, of your blue brief, or I guess that must be your blue brief. I don't think your appendix is that long. So your blue brief, page 45.
Okay. I believe so, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And so in this case, the court said this capable of repetition yet evading review exception applies when the challenged action is in its duration too short to be fully litigated prior to the cessation or expiration, and there is a reasonable expectation that the same complaining party will be subject to the same action again. I don't think there's been a stronger case for that, Your Honor. It's the same exact parties, the same exact issues.
Okay. I think we have your argument. We thank both counsel.
Your Honor, can I ask for 1 minute? I have not been able to address the key issue in this case.
Yeah, go for it. You got 1 minute. Short.
Your Honor, under Oak Grove, Voss Realty, and Tinton Falls, there's a double knockout here. Even if you were to find that we needed to have the PAL and were ineligible, UCIG is ineligible. Judge Bonilla has already ruled in his transcript that he had serious concerns with the responsibility decision. So if they are ineligible, we're ineligible. And under Tinton Falls, Voss Realty, and Oak Grove, now we have a substantial chance to participate in the new hypothetical procurement. And so we believe we have standing under your recent ruling, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.